All right. Thank you all for joining us today. And I want to give a big thank you to Don Kennard, who will be speaking with us this hour. So Don is Senior Fellow Production Operations at Lockheed Martin. So this interview is an element of IRI's digitalization community. Through the DXC, you can access case studies and white papers with fresh, relevant content, a conference dedicated to digital transformation. That was Digital Futures, which just happened about a month ago in Cleveland. We have facilitated roundtable discussions on key topics, and we do updates with insights and additional resources and webinar thought leader interviews like we're doing here today. And these are generally on the third Thursday of the month at noon. And if you haven't already signed up for updates on that, you'll start getting those from me after this call. If you don't want them, just let me know and I'll take you off. No biggie. So just a few housekeeping items before we can begin our conversation with Don. And I promise we'll have lots of time for Q&A. Don't worry, everyone. So first, the session is being recorded and you will get a link to the recording. We'll be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there won't be any visuals here today. Second, please hold all questions until the end. And once we open the floor to questions, you can either type your question in and I'll read it out for you, or you can come on camera and unmute and join us for a conversation. All right, boring stuff out of the way. Let's get started. So, all right, Don, let's start with the basics. You got to fill me all in on what is, let's start with a digital thread. What is that?
Well, that's interesting because the digital thread was created, and it's an old concept. I mean, it's been around for about 20 years, but it was created in that interim just before the Joint Strike Fighter program in the 90s. So as I understand it, and it depends on who you talk to, it was a product of AFRL, you know, Wright Laboratories and Lockheed Martin. And it came out of an effort we had called Virtual Product Development Initiative. And for us, it was the beginning of the use of 3D models. So the 3D modeling technology, frankly, that was pioneered by Boeing for 787 back in the 80s, had become an industry standard. And Lockheed Martin wanted to join into that, or at the time it was General Dynamics. So, you know, obviously we were acquired by Lockheed, so I won't go into all that. But let's just say the concept of it was this. We wanted to create 3D models in the engineering space, and we wanted those 3D models to be consumed directly by the downstream functions, including manufacturing, supply chain, sustainment. Because before that change, essentially what we did on past programs is we didn't have 3D models. We had these partial wireframes and surfaces that we then sent to suppliers, and everybody had to construct their own models from those pieces and put them together. So by using the 3D data in a CAD system with a PLM system together, we could then send that data downstream. They could consume the models directly. We use those models directly for NC programming. We use them directly for inspection. We consume them in graphics for planning. Sustainment uses them for their tech orders to do sustainment. So and think of the digital thread as that highway, that connection between the engineering data, the manufacturing data, what goes to suppliers and what goes to sustainment. All of that is the highway for the information from engineering to be consumed downstream.
All right, I think I got that. So making the leap now, so what is a digital twin?
Well, digital twin concept came up a couple of years after digital thread, and from my buddies, John Vickers from NASA and Mike Greaves from Florida, who came with the concept of digital twin. So now using the digital thread, I then create digital twins using the digital thread. So for example, and there's all sorts of twins. I want to point out that twins can be a virtual model of anything, a virtual model of a part, a virtual model or simulation of a system like a fluid system, a hydraulic system, ECS systems. Then they can be manufacturing twins where I have the 3D models of the manufacturing process moving through our assembly line. It can be operations analysis models where I'm actually creating a model of the aircraft that I want to use to demonstrate mission planning for the customer. That's more of an OA model. I have finite element models. So the finite element models, for example, are stress models that are also digital twins. So there's been a lot of confusion in the industry, I think, about modeling and simulation and virtual twins or digital twins. And some of our folks, we even go, what's a digital twin? Well, a digital twin is nothing more than a virtual representation of an actual part, meaning a physical asset, or a virtual asset. And there's a little bit of controversy on that that I won't go into. But let's just say it's a virtual model of, in my mind, of a physical asset and or a virtual asset that you use to try to represent the performance of that physical or virtual asset. So when I, for example, when I create a finite element model or a computational fluid dynamics model, what I'm trying to do is represent and predict the behavior of that asset in whatever environment using that virtual model.
Okay, so you touched on this a little bit. How do digital twins differ from the modeling and simulation programs that we've been using for years?
They actually don't really differ. Modeling and simulation is done with digital twins, and that's probably where the confusion comes in. I think the difference now is that we have a lot more expectations out of our digital twins maybe than what we had before, meaning that in the normal days, in the normal programs, you created these virtual models. That's what you use to create wind tunnel models for physical testing. More and more, though, we're trying to use our digital twins as a substitute for actually physical testing. So we want to be able to better predict, for example, with my computational fluid dynamics models, I really want to reduce the amount of physical wind tunnel testing that I do using virtual testing. I want to be able to use my finite element models and the simulation and modeling of those to be able to reduce some of the laboratory testing, for example. I want to use my manufacturing models to be able to lay out the factory, you know, and be able to reduce the mistakes that I find, you know, when I first started building an airplane. So more and more, we're trying to develop, let me talk about a maturity index for a minute because it's important. So Lockheed Martin created this digital twin maturity model index. It's available publicly, but let me just go into it. First of all, level one digital twins are totally virtual models. There's no physical asset. It's what we use to develop the program, to develop the asset that we're trying to design. Level two models are when we start actually combining physical testing. It might be qualifications for systems from other suppliers. It might be laboratory testing for structural details. That's level two twins. And those twins feed back into the design. Level three now for models is really flight testing of our assets, laboratory structural testing, software validation in the software laboratories. So it's all the very sophisticated testing. And the point is at level three, we want to create the level four twins that can accurately predict the performance of the airplane, meaning I want a finite element model I can use to do material review and analysis of. I want to use my OA models to predict how the aircraft going to perform in the field. I want to use my sustainment twins to show how I can support and base our aircraft out in the field. So, and then the final number is a level five twin. And the level five twin is a twin with all the capabilities that can then engage other twins, other products, other assets, satellites, whatever, in an ecosystem, in a level five joint all domain ecosystem. So that's the ultimate, is level five. And a lot of models will never get there. We want to get a lot of models to level four so they can be used to predict the behavior of the aircraft to reduce the amount of physical testing we really have to do. And so the point is, we want to be able to reduce the time it takes from design to validation of the product by using digital twins. And that's kind of the whole point of what we're doing with digital transformation, is to shrink that development time and be able to use modeling and simulation more effectively instead of having to do extensive testing.
Okay, so first of all, I know I'm gonna get this question later. Where is the maturity model available? Because I know folks are gonna ask about that.
The maturity model is available on the Lockheed website. If you go to, there's a Lockheed Digital Transformation website, and it's publicly on there. Or if somebody wanted it, they could just email me or LinkedIn. I'm a LinkedIn person, so they can link in with me. Be happy to do that. But it is a publicly available. It's also been highlighted in a lot of the presentations I've done that have been publicly released. So again, if you can't find it on the website, be happy to let me know. And in fact, what I'll do is I'll send you a link. Maybe you can distribute it to everybody, but that's kind of the point. And I think the other point I wanted to make is to remember, there's not a single digital twin. Something as complicated as an aircraft has got lots of digital twins because they're in different times and environments. You know, a finite element model is different software than an operations analysis model, et cetera, et cetera. So.
Okay, could you dive a little deeper into how you're using digital twins at Lockheed?
Yeah, there. I would say we create a digital twin because of a business case, meaning a digital twin is created because we want to be able to use it to predict the behavior of aircraft in the field, in testing, to reduce the risk of that testing. So every twin we create's got a reason for it. It's to save money, is to make it complicated, is to reduce the risk, to predict behavior. So we use them, I want to say, extensively for just about everything, because frankly, the issue today is the difficulty of modeling and simulation. So when I say, what am I interested in? I'm interested in advancing the state of the art in modeling and simulation to better be able to predict behavior of our products without having to do, you know, 10 or 15 years of testing on them. Sometimes it takes that long by the time you do all the flight testing you need to do. So those are the kind of things that we focus on. But there's a business case for it. There's also, I think, a customer desire to be able to use these models for their purposes, whether it be in the case of aircraft, it could be wargaming of some kind. And so there's a lot of interest in these models, I believe, one, to start out with a better product at the beginning, reduce the amount of testing. And so, again, we have models for everything, and we have had for a long time. The difference is the capabilities today for more sophisticated modeling and simulation and the computing power that we have, I think, are going to allow us to do a lot more than we've ever done before.
That's really cool. So kind of stepping back, trust. So how are you working to develop trust in these models? Because, I mean, we're talking about aircraft here. There's huge risk. So how are you developing trust, you know, with the staff who are using the digital twins, but then also with your customers too?
Well, you said the magic word. It's both internal and external trust that we have to develop. You know, when you've got a group and we've been doing things a certain way for maybe a couple of decades, and you go, well, now let's just use this model. Well, first of all, we have to convince ourselves, in our internal design people, analysis people, that the model accurately predicts the behavior, whether it's manufacturing, whether it's, you know, operations analysis, whether it's flight dynamics. We have to know that that works. And that is not going to be a short-term thing. That's going to be a journey internally and with our customer, because just like internal folks, our external customers have to be convinced that our models accurately predicted. Now, we do have certain models already that have been certified by the customer to predict behavior for certain features of the aircraft performance. But we have a really, that's going to be a journey that really I'm encouraging not only industry and government cooperation, but also academic cooperation. You know, I'd like to get the universities a lot more involved in, I would say, practical applications of the modeling and simulation technology, whether it's CFD or finite element models. I'd like to see us work together, you know, with industry, academia, and government to develop the trust and accreditation of these models. And that's really the next hurdle that everybody has to go through. I mean, everybody wants it, but it is very, very difficult to, you know, to convince everybody that the models are accurate. And that's just going to take time.
So, you know, another key element is just making sure you've got good data that's going into this and enough data that's going into the digital twin. So, you know, Lockheed Martin's been around a long time. How are you making sure that you get, how are you picking what data to go in? And how are you making sure, you know, going forward, you've got the right stuff and it's managed right? How are you managing all of that? That must be huge.
Well, the trick is kind of this, because you can imagine that all of the data we get during the development of something like an advanced fighter aircraft is pretty intense. And it's not just data we generate with the digital twins, but the data we collect from all the testing that we do. The part that we've got to do is we've got to take that data and feed it back into our tools. What I mean by that is we've got to spend the effort to take the data we get from all that testing and all the models and simulation to improve the actual tools for those models and simulation. So, you know, on an aircraft, for example, we'll have all kinds of sensors, and all that sensor data is used to collect all that information. When we do analysis and structural testing, we'll have strain gauges on an aircraft to measure all of that performance. All of that data then needs to get fed back into really developing better, more accurate tools so that we really can predict behavior. I've always had this vision, being a geeky scientist. I'm a Star Trek Next Generation person, and there's this scene in Star Trek Next Generation where Commander Data, the robot guy, comes into the engine room, and he pulls up a hologram of the warp drive. Well, he does the hologram up there. He makes some changes to the model that's there. He does run some analysis. It works, and then he implements it in the product. Now, we're ages away from doing that kind of thing, but the point is that the best opportunity for not only for aerospace business, for a lot of different people, is to be able to use the modeling and simulation to be able to develop the products and, I would say, reduce the risk, reduce the cost of product development. You know, one industry, for example, that's pretty far ahead on this is race cars. They use computational fluid dynamics for doing a lot of their analysis in wind tunnels these days, or without, you know, computationally, instead of doing it in actual wind tunnel. It saves them a lot of time, and they get a lot of accuracy out of that. That's where the business, for example, I need to be able to do fuel analysis without having to build what we call an iron bird that actually puts hardware in the loop. I need to be able to do software development and be able to model and simulate the software without having extensive software laboratories with all the hardware and all the parts in the loop. Those are things that are coming. Those are things we're working on, just like everybody else in the business, I think. The opportunity is there. I think where we go from here is really going to be an industry, government, again, hopefully academia, involved in creating better models, better simulations, and the computational power is coming. You know, we are using high performance computing, and And that's a whole world unto itself, is this whole world of high performance computing. You know, the kind of stuff you've seen on, you know, NVIDIA kind of stuff. There's all of that thing is really working to our favor.
So how do you approach making sure everything is connected and accessible? I imagine there's a lot going on between, you know, internally and customers. How does that all work?
Well, kind of let me bring you into the world here. We started out 20 or 25 years ago with model-based engineering. And model-based engineering was simply, I guess, the use of 3D models to represent structure, and then the consumption of the 3D models. Now we're putting a lot more data into those 3D models, but the transition from model-based engineering to model-based enterprise is the next challenge, because model-based enterprise is, I'll call it the in support or in concert with Industry 4.0, which I call the next industrial revolution, the revolution of data. And so model-based enterprise is now connecting the model-based systems, the CAD and the PLM systems, with the manufacturing execution systems, with the ERP systems, with the sustainment systems, and really having an integrated enterprise system that can not only consume all of these models and simulations, but then use those to basically look for opportunities across the enterprise. So it's not anymore just about engineering and about manufacturing cost and supply chain. It's about the way the whole enterprise integrates around this model-based enterprise or model-based engineering. And that's, I think, one of the things. And by the way, there's plenty of opportunity for digital twins in finance, for digital twins in supply chain. And what we're going to find is much more data being so accessible. Today, it's typical to have CAD PLM systems and MES systems and ERP systems, the same systems that are frankly connected by people, meaning it's somebody has to do something and move data between one system and the other. That over the next few years, that's going to change, where data becomes more integrated, more accessible. A lot of the standard reporting is going to be automated. I tell my mentees that if you're making charts, you better find another job, because the wave of the future is being able to connect these systems, create automated reporting and metrics using things we call RPAs, which was robotic process automation, where all of a sudden we're connecting all the pieces of the system. So again, you think about a digital twin for the enterprise that is monitoring and predicting supply chain performance, that's looking at data from the suppliers and identifying risk issues, that's looking at quality data from our customers in the field, as well as the factory, to predict things that we ought to be able, that we ought really need to look at, to give us that. You know, one of the keys for digital transformation, there's really four keys. The first one is we really want speed, that ability to deliver the product. The second one, we want to be more agile for our customers. We want to be able to react to their needs. Technology is changing so fast that we have to be able to react to new technologies and new situations as they come up. We need to use all of those data and twins for insight into the performance of our product, of our products. And then all of that, of course, is the intention is to support our competitiveness in the business. So all of the major aerospace companies, I mean, we're, you know, I call them competimates, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, BAE, because we're partnered with them, we compete with them, you know, it kind of depends on the program. We know each other really well. And so it's an industry that is you know, in a lot of respects, headed in the same direction. You know, somebody's ahead of somebody here and there. But the fact is, our whole business models across all of our competitors is really focused on this digital transformation, the use of digital threads, digital twins, modeling and simulation. That's kind of everybody is headed the same direction.
Well, that's good to hear. But it brings me to the next issue, which is cybersecurity, which I imagine might be a small issue at Lockheed Martin. How's this all going to be reconciled?
Well, it's interesting. You know, you can imagine Lockheed Martin is probably one of the most high value targets for any hacker out there. I mean, and we're not talking about kids in their parents' basement with wearing sweatpants. We're talking about, you know, state actors trying to break into our systems. And then it's a regular, normal thing. And the fact is that when you start looking at integration, the way you look at integration of our systems, it actually increases your risk if you have cyber attacks, right? Because then when you're compartmentalized, there are little pieces that you can find, but all of a sudden if you get into the whole system. So, but you know, Lockheed Martin is, if nothing else, we are intensely focused on cybersecurity. Our government customers are very focused on it. Our products have to be secured from tampering, from cybersecurity. So I would say that for us, it's an absolutely inherent part of what we do. And I'll be honest with you, there really isn't, the digital transformation has got to include cybersecurity, because one begets the other. We can't have the kind of environment we want if we don't have the secure environments. And that's, but again, you may have seen recently that Lockheed Martin got this agreement with Microsoft to develop classified cloud capabilities, that type of thing. And so I guess I say it like this. We are very focused on cybersecurity as a company, as an organization, for our products, for our customers. And I have an awful lot of people that around here that's their full-time job. And, you know, we have to deal with it every day and constantly look for those threats.
Imagine so. So looking to the future, you've mentioned before, you know, industry, academia, and government working together. You know, how can we hasten the development of digital twins?
Well, to be perfectly honest, we as a country need to identify modeling and simulation, digital twins, as part of our future industrial policy, meaning that this is very expensive work, meaning that companies in the defense businesses, for example, you know, it's tough to have all the resources that you need, you know, in the defense environment to be able to pursue some of these long-term, very complicated, very computer-intensive type of work. And so we really need that the government to really, I think, personal opinion here, to be able to stimulate that development through contracted research and development, to really accentuate the need for modeling and simulation behavior in our business. So again, all of us are doing it to the extent that we can afford it internally, but this is a journey that's going to take a decade, not something that's going to come really quickly. And we have to go together, because even Lockheed Martin can't develop a program. The government just say, okay, I agree with you. We're going to have to go in this together. So I think there's an opportunity here to establish these computing resources, perhaps centrally. You know, you saw something recently with the CHIPS and Science Act that they passed, because they recognized that, you know, where we used to build 40% of the chips, now we build 10%. And we can't even build the most sophisticated ones. So they've recognized that weakness and are putting money where their thoughts are now. The same kind of thing needs to happen in the computational development world. We need to bring those resources to this problem so that we can be more faster, so we can be more agile. And again, I think it's a wonderful opportunity for us to get going on this. And there's a lot of work to do. It's an exciting area. You see the benefits, but again, it's just gonna take a while to get the kind of simulation environments and the data to all kind of come together.
Okay, so thank you. We've already had a lot of questions coming in, and normally we're a more intimate group, and so people are able to just kind of jump in with their questions. I just ask that if you want to do a question face-to-face, you raise your hand and I'll call on you, so we don't have a lot of people coming in. But while we wait for that, we've had a bunch come into the chat already. And I want to give a big shout out to Pete Delcamara from Kimberly-Clark, who posted the link to the maturity model. So we don't need to worry about finding that now. So our first question is, what are the steps or procedures you adapt to validate various levels of model?
Well, I think it's somewhat fluid, okay? Again, level ones are virtual models. There's not physical assets typically at that time. That's a pretty easy one. Level three models are where we're doing full-scale testing on our products or full-scale laboratory testing, full-scale flight testing, hardware in a loop, avionics testing, and that kind of defines that. And then level five is really I have a model that can engage other models from the customer or other Lockheed Martin models in a common environment. So those are kind of the levels. Level two models are the initial testing we do. So we tried to keep it simple because, frankly, think about what Lockheed does. I have aircraft, I have satellites, I have Orion, just launched Artemis here the other day with the Orion capsule. We've got missiles, we've got helicopters. There's so many different kinds of products and they're developed in a lot of different scenarios. Some are brand new products, some are modifications. We also have an enormous number of software products that we deliver as well as hardware products. So we try to keep it a little bit fluid and the intent is simply to go, is to try to keep track of ourselves. What are we really looking for? We know that some things require level four models if we're going to try to use those models to certify and validate performance to the customer. And we have a lot of models today that the customer accepts as accredited models for validation. And again, level three models are kind of normal, but what we want to do is reduce that testing in level two and level three so we can go to level four a lot faster. That's the gist.
Okay, and switching gears slightly, so most of our members are going to be going to third parties to build and help create their digital twins. And I don't know if that was the case at Lockheed Martin, but if you were thinking about that, what are the most important considerations that you would use in choosing a partner?
Well, that's a good question. We tend to use commercial software modified with our knowledge, our internal capabilities. And so I think flexibility is a big one. You want to be able to have your modeling and simulations consumed easily by other of your assets. We need to be able to build models that'll react, that'll be able to be, for instance, in other domains. And so you want software. One of the issues in our business today is that there's a lot of modeling environments out there. We need to be, and we have thousands of suppliers, literally thousands, who are all in different systems. So we want the world to be much more flexible and interoperable across our thousands of suppliers and partners that we have. And that's the same thing with software. I would say number one thing, try to make sure that your software is exportable or portable, that it can be used with other of your software as well as with, for example, with customers and other programs. your supply base is typically real important, because sometimes you get models from your supply base and you want to be able to consume those too. So that's something we work on with a lot of our software suppliers. You know, again, I understand their point of view. They don't necessarily want to be seamlessly compatible, because, you know, you could buy one set of software and then not have to buy anybody else's. And I get their business model. I get it. But we're trying to be that we're that person in the middle trying to consume all of these different models. I think the other piece is really developing a relationship with a supplier, a software vendor, a modeling simulator, you know, and making sure that, because a lot of these things are going to be a long-term commitment. So it's not just, hey, do this for me and see you later. Most of these things are things that you're going to want to continue over time. And, you know, granted, software is inherently time limited, you know, that we're always getting into a new program, a new ERP system, a new MES system, a new CAD system, a new PLM system. Those are things that you got to keep an eye on, too, is what is that long-term vision of your company in terms of your advancements? And so those are just a few things.
So along similar lines, but focusing on the customer side. So we had another question is, do you make some of your models available to your customers so they can use them for training or maintenance? And if so, do they have the platforms to run and use them? I.e., are the platforms in a format that are not vendor specific?
The answer is yes and no. Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. And by the way, sometimes you really want to have intellectual property associated with it. I mean, all of us in the business are trying to develop our competitive positions. And so we may not be totally transparent to be able to just give everybody the software that we want, because we're trying to maintain that discriminating capability. However, these days the customer is asking for more and more of it, and we have to work with them to be able to get them what they need to be able to use and still protect our competitive advantage. So that's become a pretty big issue in the business today, is how to guarantee development. You know, if we have to spend a lot of money to develop something, but they just have to give it to somebody, you know, that's kind of an issue for us. So I think it's a mixed bag. Some things are pretty straightforward. What we have to do, again, and I mentioned this earlier, is we have to be sure that those models, for example, if I'm going to have a model that's going to be in this joint all domain environment, and let's say I want something that's going to engage with a Northrop Grumman asset or a Boeing asset or something, we've got to work a lot with the customer to figure out what is that environment, what is that software, what is that, how do we get all these things in a common domain? So that's an interesting problem. And it, by the way, it's not any different really than sometimes you have stress analysis problems or CFD models where you're not really consistent between one of your partners or suppliers and what you have. So there's all kinds of those issues. But the bottom line is the customer wants more. We want to serve our customers. That's who we work for, you know. But we got to make sure that they're compatible, and we also have technology protected, our competitive advantage protected.
Makes sense. So you touched on this very, very briefly earlier, financial digital twins. What do those look like? What do those encompass?
Well, for example, some of it could really be just doing standard earned value management. So, you know, you have resources out there. You want to automate earned value management. That's a sort of a digital twin. You want to predict, for example, sales and returns and profit margins, and, you know, all of that in our business is kind of negotiated. But for the most part, I like it because people can predict, for example, return on investment for different types of technologies. People can use it to do financial planning. I think those are the kinds of things that how would I call it? Look at, for example, when we start a new program, trying to predict capital expenditures, trying to predict supplier outlays, termination liability, all of those kinds of things are kind of fundamental. So I think, let me put it this way, I don't think there's anybody safe from the digital twin. You know, it's kind of interesting being a production person myself. I'm kind of used to having a target on my back. Because everybody's like, well, let's go after manufacturing costs. That's the thing to do. But I'm here to tell you that there's just as much opportunity above the shop floor as there is on the shop floor in terms of enterprise efficiency. And so nobody should feel safe from the digital twin. Okay. Digital twins are coming. You know, resistance is futile. And more, even I think a good example is Wall Street. You know, they're much more about these models and simulations that today than they are about brokers contacting individual investors and working. They're all about models and simulations of financial conditions. They're probably hiring more computer people than anybody these days just to do those predictions.
Are we trying to see how many Star Trek references we can get in?
Exactly.
All right. So this one is from Jaap de Vries from FM Global. So Jaap asks, are the different DT levels mapped onto the 9-level TRL model? And Jaap, if I am not entirely sure what all those acronyms are, so.
I'm very familiar with that. So let me.
Okay,
let me
good. All right, thanks.
We originally started thinking about, we started thinking about, you know, 9-tier models, which were more consistent with TRL, but really TRL and MRL, by the way, TRL is technology readiness level, and MRL is manufacturing readiness level. And we started talking about, you know, more levels consistent with that. But the fact is we realized that the TRL MRL levels are more of a continuum, meaning you go from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 to 9 or 10. Whereas the digital twin maturity levels are kind of an entity up unto themselves. For example, let's take level 1. I want the best level 1 models I can get because I want to start my design process with extremely good loads and criteria and configuration. So I want my level 1 twins to be very sophisticated. I want my level 2 and level 3 twins, but it's not necessarily a continuum because not everything will get to level 4. Manufacturing twins probably won't get past level 3. So it's not exactly good to say that, whereas when I use TRL or MRL, it's really a maturity of the product all the way from development through production and rate production. So it's a little bit different context. So, you know, I'm interested in good level 1 models and really working on level 1s in order so that my other models can be faster and better. So I hope that makes sense.
Well, it does to me now that you cleared up the acronym situation. So thank you. And we had another question on, could you cite an example of industry process digital twins?
Oh, gosh. Probably several examples there. Let me start with one. Let's take sustainment of our products. You know, we have, and you can imagine the complexity of basing an F-35 somewhere overseas. You know, what materials do they need? What assets do they need? What capabilities do they need? And so, and then, by the way, how do we support that while we're supporting every other thing and every other partner that we have and customer? So sustainment modeling is a good example. I would say manufacturing models. For example, it is really important for us to be able to predict span time and touch labor involvement in our products. And some of that is, you know, created through the manufacturing simulations. How many people can I get on the product at a certain time? What's the span time for doing all of the development? So there is a lot of industry. And then earned value management, I mentioned a little bit earlier. So I want to say there's plenty of industrial processes. Configuration management, for example, I design an airplane, and then before I deliver to the customer, I've got to collect all that information on the as-built condition to be able to roll it into a package to deliver at the end. That's an example of a process that could be much more automated than it is today by creating this as-built digital twin, meaning an as-built digital twin is a record of the parts, the serial numbers, all of the information collected on the floor that's rolled into the delivery package for an aircraft or another product. Those kinds of things are all, many of our processes are manual today that we hope to automate in the future and be able to collect data much more. You know, for example, you know, barcoding, that seems very simple. Everything going to have a barcode on it. Everything going to be read into the systems a lot more simply. Automated inspections using some advanced manufacturing technology. All of those are the kinds of things that are going to feed into this future state.
And so we're going to take just one last question here because you've been so generous with your time today, Don. So one huge emphasis on today's digital twin is the friendly interface to allow users to interact, which a lot of traditional simulation/modeling tools do not provide. Did you develop your own integration and visualization interface level on top of your FEA or CFD models?
Generally, that's a joint development between the software supplier and us. We have at Lockheed Martin, since we, you know, we live for these virtual simulations. I mean, that's kind of what we do. And so we have groups of people. We have an expert out in Palmdale, for example, on visualization technology. So typically we'll start with the basis will be some commercial software. And these days, this gaming software that you see in all the video games, the gaming software has become kind of important to everybody because the visualizations are so important. So we'll typically start out with something like that, but then we'll add our own flavor to that to be able to make it do what we want it to do and show the visualization that we want to. So I want to say we're probably not starting from ground zero with any kind of software. We're using commercial and enhancing it and enhancing with capabilities that serve our purposes.
And we'll call it a wrap there. So Don, this has been so interesting. Thank you for taking the time and the patience to explain all of this to us. It's been so interesting. I've loved it. So again, thank you so much. And thanks to everyone who joined today. We appreciate it. This has been a great crowd and all the questions have been fascinating. So thanks everyone. And again, Don, thank you for being so generous with your time today.
And again, I am available on LinkedIn if somebody has a specific question. That's how I communicate with everyone. So feel free.
Awesome. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Don. And thanks, bye-bye. Everyone. Bye-bye.